Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
This show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a revolutionary new daily fantasy game whereby you pick 2, 3, or 4 players to go over or under their fantasy point projections, and if you're correct, you win. Pick 2 or more players from the same sport or league, or go cross leagues for your parlay. Use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, 5, and receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. But first, sign up at prizepicks.com to start winning today. Sports betting season is in full force. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS has been pioneers in the sportsbook industry for almost 3 decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BetUS.com. They have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 800-69-BETUS. That is 800-MY-BETUS. And you will receive a 125% sign-up bonus by using the bonus code 5. That's the word 5, F-I-V-E. They also have re-up and referral bonuses as well. Follow my lead and open an account with BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS. This show is brought to you by Lewis Peters State Farm, agency representing the number one auto and home insurer in the United States for more than 60 years combined experience in the insurance industry. Local agents that understand South Florida's unique market, you have access to them 24/7, walk-in, call-in, click-in through lewispeters.com. You can find them online on social media at SF Agent Peters, or you can call at 305-275-5585. Remember, lewispeters.com.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is here with me. Chris Kaufman will join me in the second half of the show. Hello, Simon.
Oh, Alf.
Yeah, this is like our new bit. Our new bit is that I very dryly say hello, and then you respond with hello. You know, that's our new bit. As always, awesome. We're brought to you by Manscaped. Use the promo code 5RSN for 20% off your entire order. Well, the Dolphins finish up their season here, Simon, and nobody seems to care except me. Oh, and the Patriots. The Patriots will care. Like, the Patriots can call their shot. They can fix their first-round matchup by beating the Miami Dolphins. Because if they lose, they got to travel to Buffalo. And, you know, I never want to say that I'm certain of a result, but I'm certain of a result. The Buffalo Bills would smash them if they play them in the first round. Unless you disagree. Do you disagree?
I don't think they'll smash them. I think the Bills will probably win. But, you just don't know what variable is going to happen. You know, we saw what happened with the wind game a few weeks ago. You know, the Patriots are a good team. They're not in the position they are for no reason. So I would predict a Buffalo win, but I certainly wouldn't think it would be a smashing.
Which kind of settles it that I believe Belichick is going to come in here all guns a-blazing trying to win this game, because the alternative is losing 4 out of the last 5 to Brian Flores. Which I guess is a feather in Brian Flores' cap. But do you agree with me that Brian Flores is kind of on the hook for this game on Sunday? Because if he wins this game, he could at least point to 2 consecutive winning seasons. He could point to a 4-2 record in the AFC East. But if he loses, this season would go from a disappointment to a galactic disappointment. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I don't really care about a winning season if you miss the playoffs, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, he should be judged on the fact that he hasn't made the playoffs for the last 2 years. So that would be the biggest issue for me. I mean, yep, winning seasons, fine. 4-2 in the division, great. But, you know, you also have to look at those 2 games you know, you play two games against the stinking Jets, two games against Buffalo, where we stunk up the joint in both, and we look no closer to cracking the Buffalo Bills code than we did, you know, 3 years ago.
Defense improved a little bit. Offense, not at all against the Bills, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, the offense is appalling.
Yes.
So, you know, but
appalling is such a good word for them.
Yeah, but it's not built to play in those conditions. You're not built to go to Tennessee. You're not built to go to New England. You're not built to go to cold New York. You're not built to go to Buffalo. That's just not what the offense is, you know. You've got a quarterback who's not built to go and play in those conditions. You don't have an offensive line that can be nasty. You don't have a running game that's nasty. So you're not, you know, you don't have nasty wide receivers who can, you know, knock people over and, you know, those sorts of things. You don't have that. You don't have big bruising tight ends. That's just not what the Dolphins are. They're not, they're a finesse warm weather team.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, what do you make of our quarterback? Evidently going to take a trip to Siberia and the North Pole to try to acclimate himself to throwing a cold football. Like, I never understood this stuff. Like, now after the fact is when you're gonna try to acclimate yourself by going to Maryland and throwing a football around with your brother. Like, I don't get this type of stuff. It's a little bit too cute and kind of dumb, in my opinion. I don't know what you made out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I would just stick around in Florida and learn how to throw a football. I mean, yeah, not learn how to throw a football. That's disparaging. Learn how to become a better quarterback. You know, he took a step from year one to year two, but he's got to take a giant step from year two to year three.
Absolutely.
He's got to work incredibly hard to become the quarterback that, you know, we hope he might be, let alone the one we thought he could be. So whether that's going to Maryland, whether that's going to Siberia, whether that's going to Timbuktu, who knows? But, you know, he has got a lot of work to do.
Absolutely, especially on his mechanics and, like, he kind of acknowledged it this week, and I don't know if you saw the pressers, but it was the most depressing set of pressers this team has ever pulled off this past week. And one in particular caught my eye, and that's from our esteemed offensive line coach. Did you see it, Simon? Did you see that pressure?
I mean, I would rather take a knife and start attacking my testicles than watch the press conferences of the assistant coaches. I did see some of the quotes, and they all made me want to take a knife to my testicles, quite frankly. You know, we're going to discuss this at the end of the season. We're going to, you know, look back and what? Sorry, what? They're not self-evaluating as they go. They're not evaluating in the moment. I mean, what? I don't understand that. I mean, I don't believe it. And if that is true, then that is quite astonishing, but I don't believe that they're not evaluating prospects as they go. So, you know, and I don't expect, to be completely fair to them, I don't expect them to come out and say, you know, Danny Crossman was about the only one who was honest in what he had to say. Mm. I don't think I expect coaches to come out and say, this guy stinks, he can't be, you know, there were some pointed questions about whether or not Austin Jackson could be an NFL starting guard. And the offensive line coach said, we're going to have to evaluate that at the end of the season. That's fair because, you know, you don't necessarily want to throw guys under the bus. Mm. But Christ, some of these guys should be thrown under a bus. Do you know what I mean? And not just literally, not just figuratively either. Although, quite frankly, they probably wouldn't be able to block the bus anyway, so it's fine. But yeah, I don't know. I don't really pay any heed to it because it's all doublespeak. It's all like, you know, I don't believe a word they say, really, because, you know,
but here's the thing, Simon, and sorry to interrupt you. It's a feature of this team because I watch other pressers from other teams. Okay. And usually what I do is that I watch other teams.
Get out more, dude.
Excuse me?
You need to get out more.
It's football season, okay? When it's football season, I'm all in, all right? So I listen to some of these pressures from other teams. They're kind of honest, except the Patriots. Bill Belichick just goes up there and mumbles for half an hour, and I can't believe you know what? Winning is such a great elixir because Bill Belichick, what he does to that media is embarrassing, all right? Like, he absolutely says absolutely nothing, then lies for about 10 minutes, then says nothing for 10 minutes, and then double speaks for 10 minutes, and then walks off the stage.
Okay. I genuinely don't know how the Patriots press manage to do what they do. I just don't know how they can just do it day after day, just suck it up and not have him do it. I would just want to, I mean, I don't even know what I'd want to do. I just don't think I'd go. I'd have to say to him, look, do you enjoy this? Do you really enjoy this? You know, because this is no fun for anybody.
Yeah, it really isn't. I mean,
like, I don't know who it was that said, but that woman that went and asked him the question about his New Year's resolutions has to be one of the bravest people I've ever seen in my life. Like,
yes.
But I wonder whether or not we think it's brave because we know what Belichick is, or whether or not everybody else is just so scared of him because they've just allowed him to become this monolith who can just, you know, speak to reporters with utter disdain. It just makes no sense. I would just literally, if I was one of those beat reporters, I would literally say to him, Bill, like, I know you don't like us, but, you know, is this really necessary? Is it really necessary day after day to come here and just dribble out a load of nonsense, not really talk to us, be passive aggressive? You know, it's just bullshit.
The thing is that it's not like it's because people think, oh, Bill Parcells did this for ages. No, he did not. Okay. I remember Bill Parcells very, very clearly. He was combative. Like, and he was combative with the New York media. The New York media used to ask him very pointed, very strong questions. They would ask him, this guy's not playing well. Why is he playing? You went for it on fourth down in this situation. Why did you do that? And he would get combative. And he would actually defend his position. That's a big difference. Bill Belichick's actually wasting everybody's time. And I actually enjoyed that question about the New Year's resolution. Like, if I were a beat writer, first of all, I'd get kicked out, like, after two or three questions. Because all my questions would be like, Bill, do you enjoy Italian sausage with pasta? Or do you like it on a bun with peppers? You know, can you enlighten us on your grilling, you know, expertise? I would ask stupid questions like that because that's all he's really going to answer. He's not going to tell you about the right guard or the right tackle. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's not going to tell you any of those things. But what Lemuel Jean-Pierre did in this, that was disgusting. You're responsible for a unit that has been absolutely disgusting. It has been terrible all season long. And then you're just going to double speak and just browbeat everybody about their questions? No. I can't wait for the day he's fired, which should be Monday. Okay. Yeah. But who the hell hires this guy is what I'm asking. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I've said this all along. This is the biggest red flag to me about Brian Flores is the assistant coaching decisions. Like, who is making those decisions and why? Why is he bringing these guys in? Clearly, you know, not ready for this or not good enough for this. Mm-hmm. You know, what I'd love to see in the offseason is, you know, a real, like, I thought the Jim Caldwell situation would actually begin to turn things around a little bit. And, you know, but clearly not. You know, obviously there was an issue with Caldwell. We don't know what it was. I know there wasn't, you know, an illness, but, you know, he's interviewing for the Jacksonville Jaguars head coaching position. So, you know, something happened there with Jim Caldwell. And I know there's a few of the beat guys are like, been sniffing around and they just can't get a lead on what happened at the story. Mm. But you'd like to know more about why we are hiring people like the current offensive line coach and not, you know, because it's such a problem. You know, we've heard some names being whispered around of potential targets in free agency. And not only do I not like them, but I also just think, who's going to coach them anyway? You know, unless you get, you know, what is wrong with, you know, an Adam Stenovich or a Bill Callahan or an Andy Heck or, you know, these guys, some of the best offensive, like, what, you know, why is he not making a play to Dante Scarnecchia to say, you know what, just come out of retirement for 18 months and just coach these guys and then hand over to a Lemuel Jean-Pierre? Do you know what I mean? But at this stage, I just don't get it. I don't know where this unit goes, but I can't believe that anybody would sit there at the end of the season and say, oh yeah, they were okay. I think we're doing a really good job coaching. We're doing, because they're not. The guys are terrible.
It's obvious that they know that they're terrible.
I hope so.
You know, well, it's, you know, they kind of admitted it on the running back side, because on the running back side, think about what they did. Late in the season, they went on and got two guys off the street to be RB1 and RB2. Okay. So they essentially just gave up on Gaskin and Ahmed at the end of the season, and Malcolm Brown, because Malcolm Brown, if you noticed, hasn't gotten off of IR for like 5 weeks for what was not such a major injury. but they have to know. And I think they do know. Now, it's what's going to be interesting is how they're going to fix these things, because, you know, it's not enough to just buy players. They need coaching, you know. Yeah. They need coaching. They need an overhaul of that entire offense. And I've said this before. Is Brian Flores the type to segment the team the way some other very, very good coaches have segmented the team, like Mike Tomlin, like Sean Payton? Sean Payton gives Dennis Allen complete latitude on the defensive side of the ball. Mike Tomlin is normally around the around the defensive side of the ball and lets his offensive coordinator this year, Matt Canada. In previous years, he had, you know, he also did have pretty strong personalities as offensive coordinators, run the offense. A lot of coaches run their teams that way. Brian Flores is just going to have to be the latest. And if that's a source of embarrassment for his ego, it should, first of all, it shouldn't be, because great coaches like Sean Payton actually run their team that way. Bruce Arians runs his team that way. So if it's going to be an embarrassment for his ego, then maybe he has to go as well. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but would you do something like that? Tell him, Brian, you got to segment this team. We got to get what is essentially an offensive head coach. And you're still head coach. You still call the timeouts. You still do the challenges. But your expertise is on defense, and we're getting a guy to overhaul the offense, and we're basically handing him the reins. Would you do something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be an interesting conversation in the offseason between Stephen Ross and Brian Flores about exactly where this team is going, exactly what the blueprint is for it moving forwards, and that involves Chris Greer as well, but also the pigeon in the rafters, which is an absolutely terrible analogy, is Jim Harbaugh. You know, if the Bruce Feldman report is true that Jim Harbaugh may want out of Michigan, well, you know, we all know Stephen Ross's connections and financial philanthropy with regards to Michigan, the university, you know, I've been to Ann Arbor, and, you know, the training facility is named after Stephen Ross. You know, it's the big building just down from the big house. And, you know, people talk about the Raiders. Well, you know, I can't believe that if Jim Harbaugh appears on the market, that Steve Ross is just going to sit silently. You know, so that will be an interesting decision. But also, I think he's got to sit down with smart people, whether that's Tom Garfinkel or others inside the organization, and just say, look, you know, Danny Crossman, you know, We went from arguably the best special teams coach and one of the best special teams units in the NFL to a pretty average special teams unit, quite frankly. You know, the kicker can't kick anymore. The punter's been mediocre. The return guy we traded to Chicago, and the return units haven't been all that. Matt Collins is great. Boyer's done a decent job. Godsey, you probably would want to move on from. Studsville's a good running backs coach, but, you know, at what point does it now become awkward because of this whole kind of co-offensive coordinator thing? Gerald Alexander is the star. Charles Burks has done a good job. So Alexander, the DB's coach, Burke, the cornerback's coach. And actually the defensive coaches generally, Austin Clark on the defensive line has done a good job because that defensive line's a good unit. And Anthony Campanile should be, you know, moving Jerome Baker from inside to outside. Landon Roberts has had an excellent year. Duke Riley played well when he had to fill in. You know, that he should be, you know, rewarded for that, or at least.
They got guys ready to play. Sure. On the defensive side of the ball, like, you can't have too many complaints.
But I think it's, you know, it's when you turn to the, you know, Jean Pierre's and Sean Flatties on the offensive line. It's the, you know, Charlie Fry, the quarterback's coach. It's Josh Grizzard, the wide receiver's coach. It's Mike Judge at tight end. You know, it's those guys where you just think, you know, I don't see it. You know, you kind of feel like you're going to need to move on from these guys. And, you know, whether that's moving up some of the quality control guys or, you know, but it's getting the right coaches in place on that offensive line, getting the right quarterback coach and the right, you know, whether that's an Alex Van Pelt or, you know, somebody like that, whether that's the guy that used to be in Philadelphia, who people raved about and became an offensive coordinator in Minnesota, whose name completely escapes me, but his first name is John. You know, but they've got to sort that. And but the other thing they've got to do is sort out coaches who are going to coach for more than one season. You've got to get into a rhythm with these guys. You've got to allow the coaching detail to sink in and not have to change year after year after year after year. You know, if we change offensive coordinator again, this will be the fourth offensive coordinator in 4 years under Brian Flores.
Let me see. He started with O'Shea the first year. They canned him. Yeah. Then it was Chan Gailey. Nah, it'll be the third one. Although, you know, we do have three right now, don't we?
But if they sack Godsey and bring in somebody else, that'll be four offensive coordinators in 4 years, won't it?
Yes, it will be.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that isn't acceptable. That's not, you can't expect anybody to learn like that.
No, you cannot. You know, yeah, they need, like I said, they need to segment this team and they need to go get like a guy with a name and with some, I don't know, some gravitas on the offensive, on one side of the football team. You know, you essentially need an offensive head coach is what you need. And yeah, Brian Flores is still going to have the, you know, he has the whistle. He gets to call the practices. You know, he gets to use the challenges. He gets to call the timeouts, which is probably a mistake. You know, we should probably have somebody in charge of that. Okay. Even the best ones. Okay. Even Andy Reid. Andy Reid is a fabulous head coach. He's a complete idiot sometimes with clock management. Okay. So I'm pretty sure he has somebody help him with that. But yeah, he's going to have to do that. And they're going to need somebody with gravitas on the offensive side of the ball. You know, I don't know who's out there. Like, is Joe Brady that guy? Joe Brady's the hot name, right? But is Joe Brady the type of guy that you just say, hey, here's the offensive side of the football. Build a staff, build an offense.
But why did it go wrong for Joe Brady in Carolina?
It seems like it was a severe personality clash with Matt Rhule.
But that's not great, though, is it?
Which is understandable because I don't know if you've listened to Matt Rhule. Like that guy's on the way out pretty quick too. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. You know, what was that about? What was Joe Brady's, you know, blow up with Matt Rhule about too? Because he can't be at fault.
Yeah, you know, sure.
But is he good enough? Does he have the gravitas to hand one half of a football team? Well, one third of a football team over to and say, this is yours. The offense is yours.
I don't think he's proved anything at the NFL level. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the concern, I think.
So you who's know? Out there? Who is out there?
I mean,
supposedly, look, Lane Kiffin lives down here and he wants to get out of Ole Miss, but like I've told a lot of people in the OnlyFans chat, Ole Miss money is much more money than, you know, Finn's offensive coordinator money. So is Lane Kiffin that type of guy where you hand the offensive side of the ball to?
I don't think Lane Kiffin wants to be an offensive coordinator. I think he wants to be a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done enough he's done more than enough at Ole Miss to, you know, to carry on doing that, I think.
And at FAU, he was yeah, coach at FAU. So who's out there? Who is out there with the gravitas to hand half of the football team over to?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the
like I can't think of any, right?
I mean, I can't off the top of my head, but you know,
well the obvious answer is Jim Caldwell, right? Now, here's the thing: he's interviewing for the Jacksonville head coach job.
Yeah, sure.
So I guess he's over his health issue.
I assume so.
Like nobody's ever said what happened there. Okay, he does not get the Jaguars job. Isn't that the most obvious phone call you get a place?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a mystery with this team, right? Like we're left in limbo.
Yeah. No. I mean, look, Mike Kafka is one of those guys. You know, at some point, you know, as the passing game coordinator of the Chiefs, at some point he's either got a shit or get off the pot. Do you know what I mean? I mean, this is a guy. John DeFilippo was the guy that I mentioned earlier on. He's with the Bears now. And I mentioned his name earlier on, actually. Adam Stenovich with the Packers, who's the offensive line coach, but also the run game coordinator. And, you know, you look at that two-headed running monster that the Packers have, you know, that's a pretty, you know, he'd be an interesting guy. You know, he might end up at Jacksonville if Nathaniel Hackett gets a job there as the offensive coordinator. But you know, what about Dan Mullen?
That's not terrible.
You know what about
that's not terrible.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Rob Chisinski's also out there, you know.
Yeah.
Do you approach Ken Dorsey? Ken Dorsey right now is interviewing for essentially every single offensive coordinator job anywhere. You know, do you approach a Ken Dorsey? Maybe it's time for Ken Dorsey to get out from under Brian Daboll, you know?
Yeah.
And you will be weakening a competitor.
Sure.
You know?
Now, do you go down the college route? Because, you know, there's a lot of college coaches out there that, you know, who are no, you know, Jay Norvell at Nevada, for example, mm-hmm. be an interesting name. Has he gone to Colorado State? Maybe if he hasn't, then, you know, there's an interesting name, you know, there are names out there, you know, interesting potential offensive core. You know, you go and look at, see, I think it's always interesting when big time NFL coaches go to college, look at Bill O'Brien and, you know, what's Bill O'Brien going to do when he, you know, does he want an NFL head coaching job? Does he want to stay at Alabama? Or does he want an NFL, you know? Because Bill O'Brien is a offensive coordinator.
What's funny is that Alabama has the best has the best coaching staff in all of football, and they're in college.
Exactly.
Like Doug Marrone does Doug Marrone do anything for you?
Less than Bill O'Brien.
Okay. You know, although his background is offensive line, like, I don't know, like there's an appeal there.
Yeah, know? Sure. I mean, he's certainly going to be an upgrade as an offensive line coach. I'm not sure I want him as an offensive coordinator.
But I don't think. Would you leave Alabama? He's currently the Alabama offensive line coach and assistant OC. Would you leave Alabama for a lateral job just for a little bit more money? I wouldn't.
I mean, no. I mean, you look at that. I mean, I'm just Googling the Alabama roster now, but, you know, you look at the number of 4- and 5-star kids that have just come in onto that offense just the other day.
Yes.
In terms of, there is 0% chance I'd be leaving Alabama as an offensive line coach. And also, let's be honest, Alabama's offensive line this year has been gash. I did something earlier on. They're 110th or 112th in all of FBS football in terms of sacks given up. Apart from Evan Neal, they've not played particularly well at all on that offensive line. Do you know what I mean? So there are certainly issues there that, you know, would need sorting, but I would not want to leave Alabama and go and pick up the piece of the Miami Dolphins offensive line. No way, no how.
Yeah. I was just looking at something. At one point, the Miami Dolphins had in order Paul Boudreau, Hudson Hauk, Larry Bechtol, and Tony Weiss, 4 of the greatest offensive line coaches in the history of the sport, all under Jimmy Johnson. So, like, he moved guys around as well. But, you know, 2 of them were to retirement that they left. You know, and it's funny that they can't, you know, they can't fix that now. But, well, they're going to have an opportunity to. All right, before we pick this game, I want to ask you about the national championship game. We essentially wasted our time for about 5 months just to get to Alabama, Georgia. Simon, first of all, is that a problem? And how would you fix it? Because I think it needs fixing. Because I was thoroughly bored by the semifinals. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I would expand it. Because I think you've got to give kids. I mean, look, this is a long issue, and there, for some reason, people don't agree with me. I would cap the amount of 5-star prospects that can go to a particular school, because it just becomes so unfair. You know, look, every year, Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State win the recruiting battle. I know Texas A&M have had a great couple of years, but, you know, every year it's those 4 teams, really. You know, and you get a Florida State picking up a, you know, a 5-star, and you get a, you know, whoever, Notre Dame picking up a couple of 5-stars in Michigan. But realistically, that's the way it's going. And what's happening is you're getting players that, you know, that's part of the reason why the transfer portal is good, obviously. But it's also a reason where you get a Quinn Ewers, who was the #1 rated quarterback and the #1 rated prospect last year, who committed early to Ohio State and is stuck behind CJ Stroud and the Miller kid who's transferred and, you know, 3 or 4 other guys. You just, like, it just seems like ludicrous that teams should just be like, I went to see Trevor Lawrence play a few years ago in college and in high school, and the team they were playing at Troup County was a kid called King Makuta. He was a 5-star edge rusher, like, ridiculous player, hands, physical. I mean, he stood next to, like, the one of the wide receivers, and it was just like, you know, a giant stood next to a, you know, a small person. And Makuta barely plays. Do you know what I mean? He barely plays, barely gets on the field. You know, he's stuck behind Will Anderson and, you know, a couple of other dudes. And, you know, and he's going to be a senior this year, next season. It's just like, what's the point? Why would you get, you know, there's another kid, Kobe Hudson, a wide receiver who played in the same game, played for Troop. He's at Auburn. He's just transferring as well. But it's just like, I don't understand why you would, I understand the competitive nature of thinking you're the best. But why, especially with NIL, why would you go to Alabama beyond winning a national title? And why would you be a three-star or a four-star guy and just be prepared to sit and never get on the field for 4 years just to win a couple of national titles? Because that's not really competing, right? But if you expand the playoff and the playoff goes to eight games or eight teams, then at least you're giving more kids the opportunity to get to a playoff. Do you know what I mean? Because otherwise, yeah, kids are going to think, oh, well, especially with the way that you know, players who go to the draft then opt out, and therefore it devalues bowl games. It just puts so much emphasis on the regular season. Now, I totally get the argument that, you know, regular season play, or that people, the argument of people for expanding the playoff, or their main objection is that it lessens the importance of regular season games because it allows teams to make, you know, early errors and losses and still make the playoffs. And obviously player health is a concern and those sorts of things, but the sport can't keep going on as it is. You know, Alabama and Ohio State, and, you know, they're just eating college football from the inside out. I don't, you know, I just don't get it.
I'll tell you what the major problem is. I think it's the scholarship structure. It used to be many, many, many moons ago. You made a mistake on a kid. Well, you made a mistake on the kid. He was not going to be a very good football player for you, but he was going to get a degree. Nowadays, they're recruiting, they're giving out these scholarships as one-year football tryouts. And if they're not good, they just turn them over and over and over again. So they're allowed to make a mistake in recruiting every single year and fix those mistakes. And if you're Alabama, you get to fix those mistakes with another four-star athlete. You get to replace the three-star that you didn't like this past season with a four-star that comes in. It's not like it used to be where you made a mistake on a three-star guy. Well, guess what? You either roster the kid or you just lost the scholarship. But he's gonna get a degree.
There's a stat that I saw the other day, which is something like in 21 of the 24 college playoff games have been won by Ohio State, Alabama, and Clemson, and the two of the other three have been won by LSU.
that's embarrassing.
I mean, that's ludicrous. But go back to the '90s, for example. You know, go back to like 88 was won by Notre Dame, 90, 89 Miami, 90 Georgia Tech, 91 Miami and Washington, 92 Alabama, 93 Florida State, 94 Nebraska, 95 Nebraska, 96 Florida, 97 Michigan, 98 Tennessee, 99 Florida State, 2000 Oklahoma, 2001 Miami, 2002 Ohio State, 2003 LSU, 2004 USC, 2005 Texas, 2006 Florida. Do you know what I mean? There's barely a, you know, yes, it's the same, but at least there's a bigger variety of teams. Whereas, you know, look at it now for the last few years. You know, it's been Ohio State, Alabama, 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 Clemson, Alabama, Clemson, LSU, Alabama, and probably Alabama again. Like, that's not.
Yeah, you know, and if Georgia wins, it'll be seen as some huge upset. And you're like, wait a minute, but Georgia's been there like over and over and over again. Yeah. They're just losing the semifinal.
The fact that Kirby Smart has never beaten Alabama in a regular season, a playoff, or a championship is neither here nor there, because they were the number one ranked team until they got blown out in the SEC championship game. And then they blew out the number two team in the nation, Michigan. So, I don't know.
That was my problem. My problem is that these teams that are facing, like Cincinnati looked like they looked hopeless against Alabama, and Michigan looked completely incompetent against Georgia. Like, you know, it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't look like that. You know,
I felt bad for the Cincinnati players because I just didn't expect them to come out and be so and feel like they could keep Alabama in check by playing not to lose, like play to win. You know, you've got Desmond Ridder, you've got Alec Pierce, you've got Jerome Ford, you've got Myjai Sanders, you've got that great secondary. Play to win. They were so conservative. I just didn't understand. I mean, Michigan just got blown off the page, but you know, Cincinnati played so conservatively that you just thought, open this up. You know, look at what Auburn did. You know, I don't know. Look at what Auburn did to Alabama. I don't know. It just pissed me off, really.
Yeah. No, they need some fixing. And with that, I guess we could close this part out. Who wins on Monday? Alabama or Alabama?
I'm actually gonna go Georgia.
Oh wow. So huge upset, massive upset. Okay.
I don't think Georgia will make the same mistakes they did in the SEC championship game. I think that front seven is gonna need to play really well. But what they're gonna need to do most of all is just get Bryce Young to the ground. There's so many opportunities to sack him and tackles for loss on Brian Robinson and things. They missed so many tackles. They've got to start, you know, they're averaging, I think they're the number four in the nation in terms of sacks. They're averaging like five sacks a game. They didn't have a single one in the SEC title game. They've got to get Bryce Young on the ground. They've got to force third and longs, you know, no John Metchie. So obviously other guys are going to have to step up. So big responsibility on that secondary. But there's just so many good players on that defense that, you know, I can't see. And also George Pickens for me is the X factor. Mm. You know, I know he's, you know, slowly coming back from the ACL, but if you can get him one-on-one against Josh Jobe, who I really like as a corner, but struggles with big physical guys, Pickens is the most physically gifted, athletic wide receiver in this draft if he enters. And I think he could be an X factor if Stetson Bennett looks his way. So, yeah, I'm going to go Georgia in a close one, which probably means Alabama will win by 20. But
yeah. And finally, do the Dolphins save a little face here on Sunday and complete the sweep of the New England Patriots? Because I'm telling you one thing, I'm putting a lot on this game, because if they go out and they play a good game, I don't care if they win by a field goal, but if they play a good game and beat this team on Sunday, it'll tell me a lot about this team. It'll tell me, look, they didn't quit even when they knew that they weren't playing for anything. They wanted to preserve a little face for their head coach. If they go out and they play like absolute garbage, then yeah, why not fire Brian Flores? Because this team really didn't step up for him. So
I would say there's a lot on the line. I would say if they play badly, puts the coach under pressure. If the quarterback plays badly, that means he goes into the offseason having four bad games to finish the season. Bad against the Jets, really bad against, or mediocre against the Jets, bad against the Saints, really bad against the Titans. And if he's bad again, that's a real issue. I think I suspect they'll play well because there's nothing on the line and the Dolphins tend to do well and there's nothing to play for. I suspect they'll probably end up just losing just because the Patriots have got something to play for. They might just lose on a field goal, but I suspect it'll be a close, tight game. But if they get blown out, I think all bets are off for the offseason because, you know, that's ugly, I think.
I completely agree with you. I think a win, they save some face and they could at least point to those two winning records and say, look, you know, we're just unlucky here, unlucky there. We're going to revamp the offense and we're going to try to get back at it. So
I don't want to say that Brian Flores are playing for their jobs, but if they get blown out, they're playing for their jobs.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I tend to agree big time, especially Tua. Like, you know, those four games are going to linger. It's going to linger like a bad smell, you know? And after a while, you know, you walk past a bad smell in your house, like, you know, two, three times. And you're like, you know what? The third time you're like, all right, I got to find where the hell this smell is coming from. And I got to fix this because this is not going to be very good. But all right. So when we come back from break, I'll have Chris Kaufman. But first, these words.
Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage? Looking for a reputable, fully licensed, insured, and certified contractor? Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. When a disaster strikes in your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. With over 62 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, and Eric and their team is prepared to handle any size disaster. The guys are born and raised in South Florida, so changing the narrative on the way contractors conduct business in South Florida is extremely important to them. Their objective is to make cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed building contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. There's no need to bring in other contractors. They will handle it all for you. Call or text them anytime at 561-408-7835 for immediate assistance. The number again, 561-408-7835. Water Cleanup of Florida.
And we're back. And as promised, Chris Kaufman. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah. I was speaking to Simon. We had a spirited, like, first half of the show we hit pretty much damn near everything except the game. We hit the game for about 2 minutes, and I guess we'll do the same at the end of our time here.
Yeah. Is there even a game though?
Yeah, I think it is. And we both, I got Simon to agree that the game was important.
Really?
Yes. Okay. Think about all it. Right. If you want to start there, we'll start right there. And then we'll finish up with the more important stuff. But I argued to Simon, you could go from a galactic disappointment to a moderate disappointment by winning this game. Because if you win this game, you are 4-2 in the division. You defeated the Patriots twice with stakes. And, mm-hmm. and the Patriots do have stakes this Sunday.
They do.
Because if they win, they get to avoid the Bills. If they lose, they get to run right smack dab into the Bills the following week. And let's face it, they'll lose to the Buffalo Bills on the road. Okay, so they get to avoid the Bills by beating the Bills.
They beat the Bills on the road before, so
they needed a tornado and an act of God to beat them.
Okay? Yeah, that was pretty ridiculous game.
Yeah, if you're counting on acts of God to beat a team, that's mm-hmm. probably a problem, you know? And especially the way the Bills played them the second time in New England with everything on the line. And I know what you like to talk about all the time. At home, it's supposed to be a big deal, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it was a big deal. New England that was such a revenge game for the Bills players.
Yes, it was everything on the line at home. Patriots at home, raucous crowd. We got them right where we want them. Thud. You know, and we're kind of used to that. So I would argue this game on Sunday, there's a lot on the line. Brian Flores can point to a 9-8 season and say, hey, you know all the problems we got. And even with all the problems we have, that's two winning seasons in a row, one game out of the playoffs each year. And this year, we went 4-2 inside the division. Once we figure out Buffalo, we're golden. You lose. It's a losing season. It's two games under what you were projected to win by Vegas. And it's an absolute disaster, really, every which way. There's no way you could redeem the season. There's nothing redeemable about it. So I think a lot is on the line, especially for the quarterback. Like, you think Tua wants to go into the offseason with four bad games in a row? I don't know. I think there's some stakes this Sunday. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's I think some players have some personal stakes. But that's what it's going to boil down to, is how many players feel that they have a personal stake in this. And, you know, when things started to go against the Tennessee Titans, I felt like players just kind of, you know, somewhere between gave up and total loss of composure and, you know,
let go of the rope.
Yeah, they basically did. And so, you know, you have to convince them that they're to go ahead and go back all in for this game, in a game that, you know, a lot of teams start to rest guys who aren't going to be, you know, veterans and stuff like that, who you don't need to risk injury or something like that. You know, how many guys, like, you know, like Xavien Howard, he's going to make some business decisions. You know, he probably has been all season, but I mean, some of those guys are going to be making some business decisions.
Well, he's I think he gets $250,000. He starts and finishes his game.
Well, wait. So if he starts and finishes the game, he gets $250,000.
I think so. Cause I think he meets
what his kind of incentive is that
it's a participation incentive that he has.
Does he have that every single game?
I think it's every single game, but I think he gets a bonus if he completes a certain amount of games. And I think he hit that bonus this year because I think he's played at least 14 games this year, right?
Yeah. He's done well. He stayed healthy. So
you know who also has
that? I'd have to check that because that. But I mean, if he's got incentive to be out there, then he's going to be out there. But is he going to make some business decisions and his tackling and stuff like that? He has this year anyway. But mm-hmm. you wonder if some other guys might. And some other guys though are playing to either be here or still be starters. You know, so they're. They're definitely going to be jazzed up. I think Tua has got his back against the wall again. And so he's going to be looking to stay focused out there. But I just wonder who else, what other guys are going to do that. We'll see. It is. it is a good team, and New England's coming into the Dolphin Stadium to try and play a good team. And so, yes, I do believe the Dolphins have more chance of winning than not, although Vegas disagrees. But
Vegas is basically saying that the Dolphins are going to pack it in. Like,
well, that's really what you got to watch on. And all other things being equal, if that wasn't a danger, you know, that players are going to pack it in and, you know, whatever, then I would say that this is a victory. This is a good team in their home stadium, and the New England Patriots are traveling, and, you know, et cetera. But who's going to give up? And I hope nobody does. So, but you kind of wonder if somebody might.
Yeah, the best case scenario is that they play very, very well, and Tua actually leads them to a win. And that'll be four out of the last five against the Patriots, and Tua beating Belichick three times in a row. That's, you know, that's something to point to, especially for the offseason. Speaking of that offseason, I spoke to Simon, and I gave him a few examples, and he kind of agreed. The thing is that we couldn't agree on who the hell is out there to take this role. But I argue that this team has to be segmented, and it's going to have to be this way. It's going to have to be Stephen Ross is going to have to sit down with Brian Flores and tell him, look, the whistle's still yours. You still get to call the timeouts. You still get to, you know, run strategy in the last 2 minutes. Although, to be honest with you, better coaches than you named Andy Reid have had people do some of their time and clock management for them. So you can still run practices. You call all the timeouts. You're the head coach. You got the title. You run the defense, but we're going to get somebody with some gravitas to run the offensive side of the ball on this team. We couldn't think of anybody, okay, that's out there besides the obvious name, you know, Jim Caldwell, who is now interviewing for the Jaguars job.
Was the obvious name? I didn't think that was the obvious name.
Who do you think is the obvious name? Because I said Joe Brady and Simon said, let's be honest, what has he done in the pros except get into an issue with Matt Rhule and get himself fired? I don't know. I'm out Matt of ideas. Rhule, do you know anybody? Any recommendations?
I think the most obvious name is Joe Brady for the Dolphins. He's in Miami. He's probably sitting at home in Miami, and he has not taken a college job because he thinks he's got pro prospects and he thinks he can cut it there. And I think he's probably right. I don't, you know, whoa, Sam Darnold is a shitty quarterback in Carolina. And it's not like they've gotten better since they dismissed Brady. He got himself fired, but that's Matt Rhule is sort of on the hot seat himself right now. And, you know, he's really turned some people off over there. And
especially with his 7-year press conference bit. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah. I didn't. Obviously, I didn't watch it. But I think that the offense did not get better with somebody else. I mean, they scored they had a 6-point outing against the Bucks, a 10-point outing against the Saints, and a 14-point outing against the Bills. 21 points against the Falcons, I guess. But you know, it hasn't been better. So it's like scoring 13 points in the game ain't gonna cut it. You know, meanwhile, back when Joe Brady was calling games, you know, yeah, they did score 26 against the Saints, or 24, 28, 34 points. You know, 21 points. So, they had a few bad ones, like against the Dolphins. But again, quarterback situation there, kind of tough. So, and what was striking to me in the Dolphins game actually was that, you know, Cam Newton wasn't getting the job done. It was clear that he was over the hill. But then they were like, okay, so I guess we'll put in PJ Walker, and like PJ Walker was worse. You know,
yeah.
And PJ Walker, you know, what is that? What is that? Well, that's a guy that Matt Rhule coached, and back in college, and that's the reason he's there. And you know, I thought he was a talented college player and all, but that's the reason he's there. And it kind of shows you know, it shows what Matt Rhule is as a head coach. He's an offensive guy. He butted heads with his offensive coordinator, and then dismissed him. You know, I think he'd be a good candidate to be down in Miami. I think that there's a strong chance that Miami sort of, well, I wouldn't be surprised if Charlie Fry is not here next year. I think even if they stick with Tua, they might start to like kick out the Trent Dilfer Tua, you know, RPO influences of the some of those of the offense and start to move in another direction. But that doesn't necessarily mean Tua will be gone, but something tells me that could happen. But Joe Brady would be a good fit, I think.
And you don't have any other ideas? Because I guess we settled on Jim Caldwell, because he has the gravitas, right? That was a good one. I'm gonna isolate that sound.
I don't know. I don't know that I see it. I think that they need a cohesive system, you know, that incorporates offensive line play, you know, with the right kinds of offensive line players, and they need to get away from their type with the offensive line. I think they need to move more toward like what San Francisco has with Jimmy Garoppolo, who's also a winning quarterback, just as Tua is a winning quarterback. But I think that system fits him better, and I think it would probably fit Tua better as well. So, you know, I don't know who necessarily is available in that regard, but I wouldn't be surprised if they moved that, you know, a name that I kicked around, and I don't think it's actually going to happen, but I mean, what if, the way Steve Ross does this, Brian Flores isn't going to let Steve Ross hire him an offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. Steve Ross walks in that office and he's like, you know, hey, we're firing your offensive coordinator. We need you to go along with this. We're going to hire a guy, and it's going to be a guy that we want. Brian Flores is going to say, fuck you. And fire me. You know, that's the scenario I laid out on Twitter before. I said, there's a very small chance that Brian Flores leaves Miami this offseason. But in the event that he does, it will probably be because ownership has some ideas and thoughts about what to do in response to the season. And Brian Flores digs in his heels and says, you know, no, this is my team. I decide what we do. And then you have the unstoppable force versus immovable object situation. And that just results in a mutual parting of ways. If Steve Ross goes in there, like, you know, hey, we're going to hire Jim Caldwell to be the offensive coach, it's not going to work. First off, that didn't work already. You know, that tried that and Jim Caldwell went running away. And for whatever reason, and we don't know that reason, but whatever, not going to happen. So I think Steve Ross's style is actually to attack it from a different direction. He's going to attack it from the organizational standpoint. And from an organizational standpoint, you know, he could try and put somebody above Chris Greer that really sort of forces his own hand. And it might be with the particular idea being, we need somebody that knows what they're doing for getting offensive linemen and forming a cohesive offense, you know. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's more the direction that they go from the front office standpoint. And then it'll still be up to the coach, to Brian Flores, to hire an assistant coach. You know, that's that. It'd be an interesting thing if they did that. When a name that I would bat around that Steve Ross is actually, you know, he's talked to in the past is Mike Shanahan. And you know, when you bring in Mike Shanahan, what you immediately get access to is that entire tree of offensive coordinators and coaches and assistant coaches all over the place that go and, you know, that all run related systems and all kind of, I mean, it seems they're all so, it seems kind of tight knit. And you could start to bring him in or bring in some of those guys to run the sort of system that you've got in San Francisco with Jimmy Garoppolo. But you could do it for Tua Tagovailoa.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I didn't touch on this with Simon, but I've spoken about it on OnlyFans. If let's just say, for argument's sake, that this show was called 4 yards per carry and Stephen Ross was our fourth co-host, do you think we can have an influence on him? Like, if we were telling him what he should do with this team, do you think we would have an influence on him? Brief answer.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, he has, and I've spoken this on OnlyFans. He has, actually, one of our members on OnlyFans changed his name to A Gaggle of Wise Men, and I think it's the most interesting and best. It's the best name, best member name, username on OnlyFans. And that's exactly what he has. There's a bunch of Dolphin alumni that hang in and around the stadium, in and around the facility, are either employees of the Dolphins or employees of the stadium. And they're there with Stephen Ross all the time when he's around the team. Do you think that they're pushing this one way or the other? Because you kind of know where all of them kind of stand at this point on Tua. Mm-hmm. So do you think that they'll have some type of influence on him?
I think a lot of people have a lot of influence on Steve Ross. The problem is that I don't really necessarily agree with all these people that run around thinking that Steve Ross is all over the place, like firing off bullets everywhere saying, we need to do this, we need to do that, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to, you know. I don't think Steve Ross really imposes himself that much on the football side of things. And so, you know, yeah, he's got influences and you know, that will indirectly influence things like, you know, how he's thinking about whether something was a mistake or not. He's going to call somebody in the office to ask them about it, you know, that sort of stuff. But I don't think he goes in and, you know, well, you know, we're all saying, you know, us being all the guys that are around Steve Ross, we're all saying that this, and so we've got Steve on our side. And so Steve is going to go out there and say, okay, well, we need to fire these coaches and bring in, you know, so-and-so, you know, it's, I don't think it works that way. I really don't. I think that's, that is severely overstated by fans who sort of, you know, fan, because we don't know the inner workings. So like we're not really privy to it, so we just all use our imaginations, and our imaginations are usually much more creative than real life. And so I think that it's probably just a great big lie when we think about Steve Ross doing all these things.
Now Steve Ross, I kind of, you know, I have a little insight into his business. He's a developer. He's a real estate developer. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the way usually developers, you know, get on in the world is they know who's lied to them and who sold them a bill of goods. And usually they don't do business with those people ever again. And they usually only do business with the people that have produced for them and have consistently produced. In other words, people that haven't BS'd them. Okay. Because the real estate development business, it's full about 50% hucksters and con artists, people lying to just get a deal done and make their nut. And then you have the other half to actually give a crap about their craft and personally, I have some wealthy clients, and I live by the saying, you know, you could shear a sheep many times, but you can skin them only once. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, I've had many opportunities to really absolutely bone one of my wealthy clients, but I won't do it because I want that guy coming back to me over and over and over and over again until he or I die. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So who do you think? Because I think that Stephen Ross is going to look at it at it this way. And I'm beginning to lean one way or the other. Who do you think he's going to look at come Monday and say, let's say they win, okay? And they win, so there's a general minor disappointment and maybe a good feeling for a day on the team. But, you know, there's still some disappointment. They're not in the playoffs. Who do you think he's going to look at and say, okay, you are not, you know, you are not producing for me here, and I think you might have to go. Who do you think he's going to look at like that in the organization? Because I can't help but think he's going to look at Chris Greer. He's going to say, come Monday, how about a promotion far away from any authority?
Well, who knows what he does with respect to Chris Greer? It just doesn't. And the guy doesn't. So first off, I don't think that he's necessarily soured on either Chris Greer or Brian Flores to that degree. And so I would be, you know, surprised if there's something like that in the offing, a little bit. It doesn't seem like how he works, you know. It seems like, you know, what he'll do is he'll bring. It's more about who he brings in. It's not, and it's less about it's less about who gets dismissed or fired and stuff like that. It's more about who he brings in. And I'm eager to see if he brings somebody in. And then we'll see what happens after that. And somebody gets brought in, and then it's like, you know, somebody else eventually phases out and goes off within a couple of years. I don't think he's going to do that with Chris Greer. I don't think he's going to do that with Brian Flores. And so I don't think he's going to look at anybody in the Dolphins organization right now and be like, you know, you're bullshit. But he might turn to somebody that, you know, he has come to trust over the years. And I don't know, whose name I had put to me by somebody on the inside, is Don Aponte. And the thing is, like, I know that she's very administrative in football. She was a cap person and finance and stuff like that. But I don't know. She's very close to Steve Ross. I mean, she's worked at RSE Ventures. I don't know. Maybe keep an eye on that. But I think somebody that has Ross's ear, and it's probably not going to be Tannenbaum again, but somebody that has Ross's ear is going to end up placed somewhere in there. And that's what I would look for.
All right. Well, they play a game on Sunday, but before we get to that one, Monday it's Alabama, Georgia. Any opinion on the game?
None.
Yeah,
I really don't care.
Simon and I were trying to fix college football, and we decided on a couple of things. He wants to put restrictions on recruiting, and I want to change the entire structure of the scholarship system because, in my opinion, what these teams are doing is like you make a mistake on a three-star recruit, you just replace them the following year with a four-star recruit. Okay, if you're Alabama, yeah. You know. I think you should pay for your mistakes, and you should pay for those educations that you're handing out. Like if you give a 3-year scholarship, if the player maintains his C average or whatever he has to keep to keep the scholarship, guess what? You're on the hook for those 3 years that you give the scholarship for. And you're going to see a little bit more parity in college football, because then when Alabama misses, they can't just dump that guy on the street and go replace him with a 4-star recruit. Mm. You know, I have a pretty good idea, huh? That's a pretty good idea.
I don't know. I haven't thought it through. I don't know if it would work or not. I mean, I don't think you're going to transfer. I mean, in order to make something like that work, you have to address the transfer portal.
Yes, you do.
So what are they going to do there? You know? And
you can cause a mess in the transfer portal. Everybody goes to Alabama.
Yeah.
Every single year.
So, I mean, in order to close up the system, then you've got to tackle the transfer portal. So who knows? I think they just kick the can. That's what they do.
Yeah, they'll probably kick the can, but the sport is broken. The sport is broken and getting less. And I love college football. I watch it for the prospects now. I used to watch it to enjoy the games. I don't anymore.
Yeah, that is the truth. I do not. I have not in a little while watched college football just to enjoy the games.
Mm. Like this coming year, you know, Mario Cristobal falls at the U, so I'll be kind of excited for an ACC title shot. You know what I mean? Mm. But I understand they have no shot if they win the ACC against any of these bigwigs from the SEC, namely just two schools, and namely Ohio State. It's like three schools that run the entire sport.
Yeah. You know?
It's Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and occasionally
it used to be Clemson too.
Yeah, but Clemson lost the quarterback, and then they missed on the other quarterback, and now, you know, although Dabo, you never know. Dabo will find something to find a quarterback eventually. But yeah, you know, the sport's absolutely broken. It's and I don't see how it gets any better. All right, this game on Sunday, they say face, or we go from disappointment to real disappointment.
God, it's really just hard to tell where their mindset is at. I wish I, because you know, all
If their pressers are any indication, their mindset is suicidal right now. I don't know if you've seen them.
Yeah, like, I mean that definitely makes me say, you know, that Vegas is right for favoring New England here. If they were getting up to play, all things being equal, I have Miami in this game. You know, they're at home. This is a Patriots, you know, matchup. Right now, a couple of things that they're already facing that were going to be tough is one, you know, Patriots already play well down the stretch. We know that. Two, this is the second opponent that will be playing Tua that will have already played him, and the first opponent that did that, the Jets. They definitely had a beat on what he wanted to do, like, and out there, and it definitely rattled him. And people said it was, you know, I think Jalen Waddle was out or something, and so maybe that's what rattled him. But I think that it had a lot to do with the players on the field having already felt what it's like to play against Tua and having, you know, kind of figured some things out about where he'd be. Because Tua figures out where he wants to go with the football before he may not go. It doesn't mean it's his quote unquote first read. But he knows a lot of the time before the play starts where he wants to ultimately go with the football. And a lot of people say that's his problem. But frankly, I mean, I've heard Tom Brady say that 85% of the time, he knows exactly who's going to get the football before the snap comes off. And so I think that, you know, a lot of what you see, like going from one read to another is sort of like box checking and also keeping the defense honest with your face fundamentals and using your eyes to manipulate things. And Tua does that a lot. He does it really well. But he knows where he wants to go pre-snap. The problem is when a team like the Jets face him a second time, they're like, they started to figure out where he would want to go before the snap. And I think that threw him off. And the Patriots are seeing him for a second time, so maybe they can do that too. And some individual players could, you know, how Xavier Howard kind of baits people. You know, this is just a smart player being a smart player. Well, there's smart players on the Patriots defense, and you wonder if second time they see him, they're going to figure out how to bait him or how to throw him off his game. And so they were already going to face that. That was already going to be difficult. But I figured they were going to be at home. They got a defense that's playing really. Prior to the Titans game, they had been playing phenomenal football. You know, so I thought, okay, they'll edge him out. But if their attitude, if their mental you know, well-being is in the trash right now, then forget about it. I mean, it might not even be competitive. I mean, it reminds me. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it could be like the last game. It could be like the last game of last year.
Yeah, that's something. Because last year they had everything to play for, and then it just started snowballing early in the third quarter, late in the second quarter.
Yep.
You know, this year those press conferences started with Flo. Brian Flores looked absolutely despondent, and then Tua, like Jesus Christ, like some of these guys need a little bit of media training. Like Tua looked like, I don't know if you saw. Did you see his press conference?
No, I didn't see it. Yeah.
Well,
I was trying to watch it like right before the podcast, right before we recorded.
Yeah, everybody's making memes of his faces because come on, all the faces he kept making were ridiculous. You know, I did talk about this before the Simon before with Simon. The Lamille Jean-Pierre press conference this last week was disgraceful.
Did see some of that. So
like he should be fired just for that. Like, I understand that you know, you don't give a crap about the media, but, you know, like that was completely unnecessary.
Okay. You know, I was more disturbed. I honestly don't really give a shit what he does when he meets with the media. I give a shit what he looks like when he's out on the field coaching the players. And I remember seeing some footage of him, you know, coaching people at the Senior Bowl. And I didn't necessarily like what I saw. I didn't think that he was connecting with anybody, that, you know, that he's imparting. It didn't look like he was imparting a lot of wisdom. And, it was kind of a little bit of a flag for me when I saw that. And I was like okay. What's this going to be like? And then we saw how the season played out, and we see him speak, and I don't really care what he says to the press, but I do care if what he says to the press, and like the fact that he can't find answers and stuff like that. I care, but if that's something that you see on the field when he's coaching, on the practice field when he's coaching and with his guys. And, they probably are going to move in a different direction there. If anything is going to be scapegoated in for this season, aside from Tua Tagovailoa, it's going to be the offensive line, and he's in charge of the offensive line. It was a risk to go with him because of his lack of experience. They're going to close up that risk. That's not going to happen anymore.
All right. Well, that's it. There is no more. The next time we talk to you, we're going to be talking to you once a week because, unfortunately, they're not in the playoffs. So no more two a weeks until sometime in March when it's free agency time. We'll get back to two a week then. But for now, it's going to be one a week. I don't think we're going to be on Monday because Monday will be Black Monday. People will be getting fired. Dolphins might be firing people. So I guess we'll talk to you again on Tuesday, where we'll basically put a bow on the 2021 season. Disappointment or not, it's at least a disappointment. It could be a terrible disappointment if they get absolutely killed on Sunday. I have no way. I don't know which way this thing can go on Sunday. I love to see them win, and I'll be rooting hard for them. But all right, that's it. There is no more. We will talk to you again next week.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.